How now, brown cow?
Sally sells seashells at the seashore.
By the hammer of Thor!
Jazz flute, yaz flute.
Many mumbling mice.
Great Odin's raven!
Hi, this is Boss Barrel Radio. This is episode 537. My name is Jamie Hoffman.
I'm Griffin.
With me, as always, is Griffin Brewer.
It's Griff Grifferman, Jeff Jeffina, and James Jamerson. Tell me about Watch Dogs 2,
Griffin. Watch Dogs 2 is... did an Ubisoft game where you do hacking, and I played it for about an hour and was like, okay, this is neat, moving on.
Were you not compelled by the characters?
I was more interested in the game because of the characters this time around, but then once it was like open world missions, and I'm like, oh, see you later, game.
How much do you like a character that is just entirely emoji?
He's not entirely emoji. I mean, he does have a voice, and there is a character there. It's not disgusting.
I do have some questions about that, because I actually kind of enjoyed Watch Dogs. Like, I enjoyed... my favorite thing about Watch Dogs was going into, like, a building and just, like, posting up, like, right at the edge of the building and just hacking security cameras, like, ad nauseum and making... guards' grenades blow up and just causing mischief and mayhem. I understand that's not so much a thing in this one.
Your tool set is a little bit more limited, so you know, there's definitely not as many options to make things explode and attract guards and cause that kind of like mayhem. It's more like you can supplement your sneaking or action with those things. So it kind of encourages you to do a little of both.
That's dumb.
All right.
No, I'm disappointed because that was like the one thing about the, like, I hated the story. I hated the driving. I hated everything about it except for just posting up at a building and just causing things to go haywire without ever walking inside.
Mm. Mm-hmm.
So I heard the next game needed to be more of that for me.
I heard that that's actually how you have to play Watch Dogs 2, because if you just go in, you'll just get shot immediately.
I mean, okay. You can't just... you can go in there and, like, run and gun, but you need to get to a point where you are viable to do that, like, getting superior firepower, and then you'd have to play it, like, very, very silly, where you just run in, shoot a guy, run away, run in, shoot a guy, run away. You could do that, but, like, there is... the path of, I'm just going to hack and stay in the back and not do anything is... I just don't think it's as viable as it was last time. Like, you have to move through the levels. You have to kind of engage with the guards on occasion. So that's something.
Does it have my favorite skill in it from Watch Dogs 1, which showed up in a tip screen, which is to take down enforcers, purchase the enforcer takedown skill. I sure hope so.
I didn't explore the upgrade wheel tree too much. Like, I didn't look at the end tree, but I got a couple of them that are just like, now you can hack stuff better.
I have an actual question about the series. Do you guys think that Watch Dogs is over? Because I heard this did not do so great. Do you think this is the end of Watch Dogs?
I think it's even worse. I think that, like, people are really over, like, open world games in the normal Ubisoft fashion. Mm-hmm. And I'm really curious to see what they do with the next Assassin's Creed, because it needs to change somehow and dramatically, or else I feel like no one cares anymore. I mean, you're always going to have those people who play every Assassin's Creed game every year.
Griffin.
Somebody's got to do it.
But honestly, I feel like they're less and less appealing, and I feel just like shooters, just like FPSs, are going down in sales year over year just because they are the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like the same thing's happening in overworld games, open world games.
But I feel like in the shooting realm, like I know Titanfall didn't do very well, even though it was really innovative, but like Doom generated a ton of positive buzz. And that's because I think they were kind of unabashedly single player first. Yeah. They did something unique. And I think if they're going to keep doing the open world thing, they definitely need to, Ubisoft definitely needs to switch it up. And they're a talented publisher. Like they, you know, Rainbow Six Siege is a game that has shown itself to have some legs, even though you guys thought it would suck.
Still haven't played it. Still won't. So,
what's that?
Still haven't played it. No interest in that.
Yeah, I do have interest, but I haven't played it.
I haven't played it either, but I've watched a lot of it being played. No. I've watched a lot of it being played, and I love what I see. Like it's a very watchable game.
Is it Counter-Strike Go, though?
How much money have you lost?
How many loot chests have you purchased?
It's not Counter-Strike Go. It's because there's no upgrades in match. It's just like set up for the dudes to
I was just gonna say I don't think shooters are going anywhere. Like Counter-Strike Go is humongous. Overwatch is prolific, and Jamie, like you said, like Doom and a couple other things are still doing
well. No, I mean shooters aren't going anywhere, but Jamie's right in that like Call of Duty is becoming tired. Like,
yes,
you can't just iterate on the same thing over and over again because eventually your audience is going to lose patience with you, and that's what seems to be happening with most of Ubisoft's properties.
Totally.
But I think they are diversifying a little, and I don't think they're screwed, but they need to think long and hard about continuing down this path.
Yeah.
It seems like the appetite is diminishing.
Yeah.
Well, but I think it's good that they took a break for a year, you know.
For Watch Dogs?
For Assassin's Creed.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, hopefully. Where's the next one going to be? Egypt or something? I don't remember.
Seems to be the leaked rumor stuff.
Images. Oh, yeah. Did somebody show someone something on a plane again?
Yeah, I think that's... Yep.
Is that Ubisoft's preferred viral marketing strategy?
Yeah.
Just have a gaffer sit next to someone on a plane.
Everyone knows that gaffers don't fly anywhere.
That's true. The plane is actually a VR experience. Well, that is a... So it's disappointing it didn't leave much of a mark on you, but... You tried.
Yeah, yeah. I would consider playing it more. It would be a situation where I'm like, okay, well, here you go. Here's your second chance game. I'm not interested, but I'll do this.
Oh, I feel like your reaction is emblematic to like consumer reaction. Yeah. Like it's like, yep, this is a Ubisoft game, all right. It's a good one, but we've seen this all before.
Yeah.
That's a bummer.
Yeah.
Speaking of seeing things before, how did you feel about Gravity Rush 2? I see you played that as well.
I did. I played that maybe an hour ago after I got back from lunch.
After the surprise podcast announcement.
Yeah. So initial impressions is, oh my God, that game is freaking gorgeous on a big screen.
Oh, I'm excited about that.
It is beautiful. And the art is, it reminds me of Ni No Kuni. So, you know, another feather in the cap there. The storytelling comes over from Gravity Rush 1, where it's kind of like in a comic book, and I kind of forgot about that. Yeah. So when it started doing it, I was like, oh, this is cool. I like this.
So they're still sticking with the comic book style cutscenes?
Yes, but then there's also like some character actual interactions. So it's not entirely driven.
I'm fine with comic books. I mean, if that's a money-saving method in order to ensure that weird-ass Japanese games are still made,
yeah.
I'm okay with it.
Yeah. The bad side is I haven't got to a point where I can fly.
What's that?
I haven't got to a point where I can actually like use the gravity powers.
Oh, okay. Does it have the same kind of weird like mystical Eastern-style shit going on that the first one did? I don't know how far you got, but it was a weird ass story.
This intro is weird in its own way, so I don't want to say anything, but it's very very like Miyazaki movie opening, kind of like where you're like, what's going on in this world? Oh, fascinating.
I'm into it.
Surprise.
I loved Gravity Rush. Did you play it all the way through, Griff?
No, I didn't.
Okay. Jamie, did you?
No, I downloaded it on the Vita, but I did not play it all the way through. Griff,
did you actually play it?
No. I played like 30 minutes at most. Griff, do you get the sense that this is another one of those Japanese games that's going to like hold your hand for far too long?
Mm.
I didn't get that sense from Gravity Rush. I mean, it's the big issue with Gravity Rush was, like, the world, if you cared a lot about meaningful side quests, then you didn't get them. Like, you just had missions that you could enjoy, but, like, everything else in the world was just kind of meh. You had to really enjoy traversal, which I did.
Yeah. What I remember from Gravity Rush, playing through, I don't know, I can't tell you how far I was through it, but I probably put, like, 5 hours in, and just kind of, like, getting to a point where I'm like, well, what am I going to do next? Like, it kind of loses the hook of keep moving forward.
Well, I think you have to be willing to push, and I think it's unless like finding a cool new environment is in its own reward for you, mm-hmm. like when you're like falling through space in weird ways, mm-hmm. You're not going to like the game. But for me, like the art direction and the ability to like land on cool things and set personal challenges and go through the weird ass story was enough of a reward. So I don't know how similar this game will be in that vein, but everything I've read about it seems to suggest it probably will be.
Yeah, I can't speak
but
to that.
Definitely. I didn't find Gravity Rush to be very hand-holdy. Did you, Griff?
Mm-mm, not at all. I conveyed it poorly before, but like the lack of hand-holding where I'm like, well, what do I do now? I guess I can
like
do this race.
Of direction,
did I beat this race? The race is still on the map. I still have to keep doing this race.
Yeah, don't ever do the race. Yeah. That's where you went wrong.
Yeah.
You really need to critical path that game and ignore the side quests and make your own side fun.
Yeah.
Otherwise, you're going to have a bad time.
I feel like that's more and more, like, generally what I feel like I have to do with Japanese games. Like, the reason why I didn't play Xenoblade is because there just seemed to be too much to do.
Yep.
And like, I just got, like, crushed under the weight of it all, and I just stopped playing altogether. I feel like the next time because I'm really excited for this sequel on Switch, mm-hmm. I want to play it, I'm going to just, like, not... Anytime anyone tells me to collect anything, I'm going to be like, no.
Yeah, it's so hard because it's like it's fighting your own OCD. But I think if you can resist, then you'll enjoy it a lot more.
Because
that stuff is just – it's like that's not the meat. Like the meat is exploring these vast open spaces, marveling at their beauty, and then playing like an anime story.
Yeah.
Which has some highs and some lows. Like it's fine. Like Saturday morning cartoons with British guys going, ah, ha, ha. And stuff like that. I mean, just enjoy that and like the vistas. Don't waste your time fighting like 10 ponies or whatever. I don't know. I think you're right though, Jamie. Like I think of like Final Fantasy 15 is pretty laden with those like hunt side quests, right, Griff?
Yeah.
Or does that go away in the latter half of the game?
Like the hunts?
Yeah.
That is. I think that's going to be your, like, bread and butter there for side quests.
Mm-hmm.
And then, yeah, once you get in the linear path, you don't really have the option to go do that anymore. But there's other things, but it's mostly like, resource gathering or going to a location, taking a picture. There's some, like, big old combat mission things, too. But, yeah, when I think side quest, I think the hunts for Final Fantasy 15.
Is the linear path when Lightning reveals herself?
Finally. Yes. Metaphorically and actually.
And actually in the flesh. Yeah. Spoilers. Noctis is Lightning.
So hot.
Well, Griff, I have it as well, Gravity Rush, and I'm excited to dig in, and maybe we can chat about it more once you get farther, but I adored the original game. I enjoy games that... kind of upend traditional methods of traversal. I think that's why I loved Mirror's Edge so much.
Mm-hmm.
And I love that about Gravity Rush, so I'm excited about how that world is going to feel. And also how those new powers are going to feel, because there's like the moon jumps, right? And like the Saturn jumps or something? Or Jupiter jumps or something? Like they have like an extra gravity jump and then like a low gravity jump.
Don't know. Haven't got to that part yet.
No. Anyway, I guess we'll find out. You wanna talk about the other stuff you played, Griff, or Jamie? You wanna jump in with something?
Somebody else take it away. I gotta adjust something here on my side, so I can't focus 100%.
Okay. I guess I could start talking about Shantae, the half genie hero, which is really, really good.
Do it.
And Griff, did you ever play? Or Jeff, did you ever play? Any Shantae's?
I did. I played, I forget even what the game was called at this point. I played the one that was released for 3DS that was originally a DSi. Or no, it was a DSiWare game that was originally a Game Boy Advance game, I think.
I own that. But I haven't actually played that one. I played...
Risky's Revenge, I think it's called.
Yeah, I think that. I played Pirate's Curse, which we were talking...
Which is supposed to be, like, the high watermark, right?
Yeah, I think that that is still the high watermark, even though this game is really, really good. Mm-hmm. The reason why I think that is because... So, Shantae, The Pirate's Curse was, like, one of the best Metroidvania-style games that I've played in recent memory. Mm-hmm. It has amazing combat, kind of pixel-perfect platforming, great soundtrack, and I just love the loop. The loop in that game seems to be really well-balanced and extended in terms of getting new powers and everything. So okay. just when you feel like you can't do something, you can head back to the home base and like upgrade some aspect of your fighting so that you're stronger and you can take it on.
Oh wait, and so do you find powers in Pirate's Curse or do you buy them?
So in Pirate's Curse it's a combination of the two. So okay, in terms of your and in both games, actually, it's a combination of the two. In terms of, like, your core abilities, like, she whips her hair back and forth, and that's how she that's how she attacks. You upgrade that at the home base. Uh-huh. And otherwise, like, some other things, like, you pick up a sword, you pick that up in the game as part of the story.
Okay, okay.
You also get, like a pirate sail that you can use to glide and float up. You get that.
So it sounds like the meaningful traversal slash exploration upgrades come through exploration itself, and then combat comes through combat, or through money.
Is yeah. Fair? Well, sometimes there's some overlap, but for the most part, correct.
Okay.
And in the new game, Shantae Half Genie Hero, it's kind of the same, although there's some substantial changes to the game overall. So, like we were speaking about before, it's less Metroidvania, more stage-based. Mm-hmm. You can very easily... And I think it's like... Some people might actually prefer this game because it's more of like a quicker hit. Like, I think overall the game might be even like as much as half as long. Like, this mm-hmm. game's shaping up to maybe be like a 7 to 9 hour game as mm-hmm. opposed to Pirate's Curse, which is like, if you want to collect everything, since you're going back to the levels so much, it's like a 20-hour game, if I recall correctly, or at least... encroaching on 20 hours. Mm-hmm. In this, you can quickly like go to any level, and then you can warp within the stages of the level.
Oh wow.
Which is really nice in terms of like backtracking and finding things. Also, the levels change when you backtrack. Like the first time you play through some levels is not the same as like when you backtrack through them, which is kind of cool. It keeps things fresh. Subtle changes, not massive changes.
This sounds very Mega Man X. Like, Mega Man X had the stages that changed after you beat the boss, and had, like, the... Like, are there little alcoves that you can only open with certain abilities, and then, like, you find your suit upgrade in there, or whatever, you know?
Oh, yeah, oh, yeah.
So it sounds very Mega Man X.
Very, now, I didn't actually think about that, but yeah, definitely very, very Mega Man X. At least what I recall of it. I don't play as much Mega Man X as Griffin does, but...
Griffin starts and stops Mega Man X, too. I think at least once every 6 months.
Yeah.
Wait, sorry, I missed that. What was that?
You start and stop Mega Man X2, like, every time I turn around.
Me?
Have you beaten it?
How far did I get? I don't think I did. I don't think I finished X2.
You have such a love-hate relationship with it.
I finished X. I love X. It's my favorite game.
I just kind of give it to you, man.
So I think that you might really like Half Genie Hero then, Griffin.
And I love X as well. I like X2 as well, though, but...
X3 is superior.
The only thing that I would say about the game is that it doesn't seem as well balanced as Pirate's Curse is. There's some like exploits that you can do. For example, you can transform yourself into a giant pot of like money, and then you can like shake and money comes out. And
nice.
it uses mana, but there's a part in the home world where it's like a pool where you can sit in to like replenish your
just
mana.
Just farm infinite money.
Yeah, so I will just sit there and I'll just farm money. And then
are you
I'll
telling
get...
me in this game you can shake your moneymaker?
Yes, literally.
All right, just checking.
And a couple other things are a little different. Like, it has this beautiful painterly Rayman style now, but it... You know, what you get in that, in terms of the art style, you pay for in terms of that pixel-perfect platforming and combat that you had in the 3DS games. It still feels really, really good, but it's just not as perfect.
Is it fully 2D, Jamie, or are there 3D elements?
It's fully
2.5D.
I mean, it's fully 2D. The camera never like turns around and then you're running into the screen. There's nothing.
No,
like that.
I mean more like, are there elements in the levels that are rendered in three dimensions?
I do not believe so.
Okay, because that was one of my gripes about the look of DuckTales, how they kind of merged like 2D and 2.5D art together to not so attractive effect. Hmm.
I wondered if
that was the case in FGD.
No,
okay, that's good.
Sometimes it can be a little jarring. Not jarring. It's just a little. You'll notice that. So they fully animate everything. So like when the character is in their animations, it's moving at like a cartoon style frames per second. But then, but then you're moving faster than that. So I don't know if you're really anal retentive about graphics, you might notice something like that.
So you're saying the animations run at like a lower frame rate than the rest of the game?
Sometimes,
that's weird.
Not necessarily for you, but like for certain enemies, like they'll be going through an animation at like what would be the equivalent of 24 frames per second, but you're running the game at like 144 frames per second.
That's weird. Yeah, I wonder if that's just an issue with the PC build. I wonder if everything is synchronized at like a solid 30 or a solid 60 on consoles.
Or yeah, I'm also wondering, is that intentional and it's trying to like emulate that kind of herky jerky lag of like a 16-bit or 8-bit action game?
Well, it could be, but the thing is, I think anytime you do hand drawn, you're limited by how many frames of animation you draw. So
true.
If you're running the game at 144 hertz, there's no way they did 144 frames for that.
Yeah. That's a very minor issue.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's just a side effect of what they're trying to do with this new style.
Interesting.
But I think it's a really, really good game. I think it's worth whatever they're charging for it on Steam or whatever. And I think it's really, really, it's still really fun. But not as funny as Pirate's Curse. Pirate's Curse was like funny. I laughed out loud at Pirate's Curse. Not really happening with Half Genie Hero. But oh my god, the soundtrack, guys, it's so good.
Yeah, the stuff you sent us was fantastic.
Oh yeah, I did listen to that. That was really good.
I talked about how Jay Kaufman sometimes, like, I think he overloads his tracks with instruments. Like, it can be a little too crazy. But he seems to have exercised a little bit of restraint this time, which is serving that music so much better.
Yeah, I completely agree. There's a huge like variety of tunes. Mm-hmm. Some of them harken back to like Pirate's Curse, but are better. And some of them are brand new and like really interesting and engaging and really flavor the whole thing. I'd highly recommend it.
Yeah, I will definitely check it out. I'm happy to discover that I was looking at my Wii U yesterday because I'm thinking about. Well, I probably will hack it today It's within my legal rights to do so.
You're going
to
homebrew that thing?
Yeah, I'm going to homebrew it. It's super easy. And it's been broken wide open, and I'm excited to turn that into my emulation device now that Nintendo doesn't care about it anymore.
Does that mean you're finally going to touch the screen with a finger, too?
Oh, God, no. That's disgusting.
Yeah, you are gross.
Why
would I
do that?
I'm calling the police.
You can't touch a resistive touchscreen with your fingers, man.
Touch the touchscreen and take your Amiibo.
What is this,
take your Amiibo
subway?
Out of the box.
Is this the New York subway, you motherfucker? Yeah, no, so I discovered I was looking at it, and I do have Pirate's Curse. I got it through, like, a Humble Bundle. I think there was a Wii U Humble Bundle. So I want to check it out.
And yeah, Griff, I see you might insert some music there. Definitely insert Counterfeit Mermaids.
Yeah, Counterfeit Mermaids was friggin', that was great. Okay. I love that song. wicked, isn't it just gone forever?
Jeff, Jamie created a Google document for a podcast that we're recording. He's taking steps in the correct direction. He's going to be able to Google here shortly.
Don't get him to walk backwards is what you're trying to tell me. Anyway, we should roll along, but what was I going to ask you? I don't remember.
Play Pirate's Curse. You'll really
okay,
like
that's,
it.
Yeah, I was going to say, yeah. Should I start with Pirate's Curse? Should I grab Half-Genie Hero? But I'll start with Pirate's Curse. It sounds like that might be the slightly better title.
I think overall it is, and I think that will stand the test of time better, but I think that this is important in terms of the direction they're taking it. If they can combine the quality of the design of Pirate's Curse with mm-hmm. the production values of Half-Genie Hero, that would be the perfect platformer.
Maybe next time. I don't know. I find it so interesting to watch WayForward carry on and do their thing alongside Yacht Club, because that's a lot of former WayForward people. And we can chat about this now or later, but there was some footage of the Spectre Knight expansion for Shovel Knight that came out over the past few days, and it looks so good.
Tell me about it.
Yeah, sure. First of all, I don't know if you guys played the Plague Knight expansion. Did you?
I did.
I did not.
Okay. So Plague Knight pretty much reused exactly the same stages, mm-hmm. Just with different traversal options.
Yeah.
Spectre Knight appears to have completely redesigned them. There's totally new elements involving, surfing on rails.
Hmm.
And his movement, he has a small jump, and then he has, a slice move that can pass through enemies, and he can wall jump as well.
Hmm.
And he can do, a slight climb after wall jumping. So the levels have been completely rebuilt around that. And I'm just so impressed by how much mileage they've managed to get out of this game. It is, I don't know, I had kind of middling expectations when I first saw Shovel Knight. And I was like, this looks cool. I think it'll be decent, but, they
when you first saw Shovel Knight or when you first saw,
Shovel Knight, when I saw it at PAX, I was like, oh, this looks cool. I don't know what to think of it, but it looks cool. But man, they have gotten so much out of it. And I'm curious to see, will Yacht Club emerge as the better company than WayForward? How will they diverge? I'm just very intrigued by the whole thing. But anyway, so for Spectre Knight, so it appears they're working with him being undead as well. I don't think he has a proper health meter. Mm. He has two bars. He has a will bar and a darkness bar, and I couldn't quite suss out what they do, but it's more complex than just dying or living.
Mm.
So it looks really cool. I'm pretty excited about it.
That's awesome.
Yeah, yeah, and they've also updated their pricing structure so they can actually make money off of these expansions.
Good,
which
I was going to say, wasn't Plague Knight free?
It is, and Spectre Knight is also free if you own the game. But they are they're rebranding it as a basic edition, and then they're going to have a Treasure Trove edition, which is going to have all the expansions. So everyone who has the basic version gets all the expansions, but starting, in a day or two or something, it's going to upgrade to the Treasure Trove.
Mm.
And so you have to buy the expansion standalone,
mm-hmm.
Which I think is good considering all the work they put into this game.
So wait, in a day or two, is this expansion out in a day or two?
No, I don't know when the expansion comes out, but they're changing their, so basically everyone who has the game is fine, but they're changing the pricing structure going forward so that if you buy it now, you can purchase the expansions on their own, or you can buy the full season pass style game or whatever. Gotcha. Get everything.
Hmm.
I don't know. I think it's good for them. I mean, this is their one project, which they...
Makes sense.
How else do you deliver all this shit you promised to your Kickstarter backers?
Yeah.
It is kind of a hot mess. But I mean, it's great for them. I mean, I'm so happy that they're doing so well. And it's intriguing to see, I'm glad Half-Genie Hero is good. It's interesting to see those two companies kind of go their separate ways and what comes from both.
So. Yeah, especially I like how... WayForward is kind of dipping their toe into the Rayman style painterly thing, and Shovel Knight's just keeping on with their 8-bit plus style.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, although I guess Yacht Club said they are working on a new game as of this year. They're starting development on something, so we'll see what that looks like. But yeah, exciting times.
Yeah.
Jamie, did you have any other thoughts on Shantae, or you want me to dive into the stuff I've been looking at?
Tell me about Dragon Quest VIII.
All right, brass. So I grabbed Dragon Quest VIII. I played maybe 30 minutes of it for the 3DS. It's a lot better than the one on iPad, that's for damn sure. Which is amazing, because the iPad is so much stronger than a 3DS, but the 3DS version doesn't run at, like, 15 frames per second.
Weird.
Yeah, it seems great. I'm really excited to get into that game, because I really wanted to play the PS2 version, but it's very slow, and I have a hard time sitting down in front of console games, and also, I don't have a PS2 anymore, so all of those things combined make it hard for me to consume that game that way. So this is my chance to come back to it.
It's because you went top loader, didn't you?
No,
Xbox,
I never upgraded,
or the PlayStation 3 top loader.
Oh yes. I thought you meant with the PlayStation 2.
No.
Yes, I have a top loader. Yeah, I got rid of my launch just because I wanted to ensure the longevity. I was a calculated decision. Mm. And plus, everything that I want is now coming to other platforms. Like Final Fantasy 12 is finally coming to PS4. But anyway, so, yeah, I played Dragon Quest VIII back when it came out for maybe 5 to 10 hours. Never really got that far. So I'm excited to actually give it a real shot. And it is instantly 1,000 times more playable than Dragon Quest VII, which I honestly, like, don't like. That game is not very good.
What's the difference between the two? Like, what immediately struck you?
Just quality of life improvements. Like, you don't have to go through an awful equip screen where you literally have to cycle through every single piece of equipment.
Ugh.
With the A button one by one. The story is not terrible. The characters have personality. There's not just these awful vignettes, which are just, like, really lame and dumb. The way that Dragon Quest VII story is structured is you start out on this small island, and you go to all these other islands, and you, like, do these weird processes to bring them back into the world, and they all have little stories associated with them, but they all kind of suck. And, like, the dungeon design is not that great. It's just an old game. Like, it's a game that started out 2D and has been converted to 3D, and you feel that, whereas Dragon Quest VIII is a game that was designed, like, for three dimensions. And with these new improvements, you know, having visible encounters is nice, although they do despawn very quickly, which is weird. But it just feels good. It's less of a slog than Dragon Quest VII immediately was.
Is this an 80-hour JRPG?
I think the story is around 40 hours. So it's long, and I'm aware of that. It's not as long as Dragon Quest VII, which is supposed to be like 80 to 100 hours, and is, like, not fun.
Because I'm really tempted to get this thing. I don't know if I'm going to have the time to put into it, but it looks really good, and it's exactly the kind of game that I've been wanting to play on my 3DS.
Yeah, and it performs well. I mean, again, the only issue is the draw distance has some issues. Like, there's some pop-in, and the enemies tend to despawn really quickly, which can kind of break immersion. Like, you literally, like, pan the camera and then turn back, and the enemy is just gone. You're like, okay. But it feels good. Like, I'm having fun with it. Just, like, much more immediately so than I did with 7. And it's got, like, voiceover, and there's some weird things. Like, some of the text is a little blurry, which I don't like. I don't know why you couldn't do that at native resolution. But on the whole, it's good. And it's only a couple of text boxes that are that way, so.
Is the main story compelling to you?
I haven't gotten far enough to really say how I feel about it. Like, it starts off, it's cute. I mean, it's basically, you are a castle guard, and you're escorting the king and the princess, who have respectively been turned into a goblin and a horse. And that's all I know at the present moment. And there's, like, an evil jester who killed someone in the first town.
How many slimes are there?
There are 3 slimes in the first battle. Because that's what you do in Dragon Quest in every game. Yeah, it's good. I mean, it gets to the action quickly, unlike Dragon Quest VII. Navigating the menus isn't an awful chore. Like, going from island to island in Dragon Quest VII is the worst. Because you have to go through this teleportation dialogue tree, which is just a nightmare to go through.
I have one question that I'm going to ask, and I'm going to base all my future purchasing of JRPGs on this question.
Okay, I'm going to do the same, but backwards, but opposite.
All right, go.
So my question is, let's say that you have a sword equipped on your main character, and then you want to go to a store, and you want to see if the sword that they have for sale is better than the sword that you have. Is there a way to do that before you purchase the sword without, like, manually opening up your menu and seeing the stats for the sword? Like, when you go to the store, does it, like, compare the sword you have with the sword you could buy and tell you easily which one is better?
Give me a few moments.
Oh, no. Since my 3DS I don't want to do this anymore, because I agree with you, Jimmy.
I'm pretty sure it does. I'm pretty sure it does. I just haven't gone to a store yet in the game. Let me check.
That was something I noticed in Final Fantasy XV, which it is a... It's there where you can compare weapons against each other, but the... To actually be able to tell... Like, it defaults onto Noctis, and you're like, well, I want to use this sword or this gun for Prompto. And then you have to, like, hit... You have to do, like, a Shoryuken command to get over to him on the menu list.
No.
You're like, okay, well, I guess this is an improvement. But I don't know what any of these fields mean and what they're doing.
For the record, it does allow you to do that.
Oh, man, so now I really have to plunk down some money for this game, huh?
Yeah, it's actually. I mean, it feels great. Like I'm. It doesn't feel as antiquated and awful as Dragon Quest VII did to me, and it just it feels charming. It feels light. I'm really excited to get deeper into it.
Awesome.
So, yeah, it's making me want to swap everything back from my tiny 3DS to my larger 3DS, though.
Just for the bigger screen.
Just for the bigger screen, because I have multiple 3DSs, guys. how many 3DSs have I purchased over the lifespan of this system?
Somebody's got to keep that Nintendo company afloat. I mean,
they were talking about this
with the Switch going to be a complete catastrophe and the death knell for the company. You know, Jeff, you got to step up and make sure that place stays in business.
They were talking about this on Giant Bomb because Jeff Gerstmann was saying that, like, between him and his wife, there's like 3DSs in their home. So it's like, you know, they sold however many of them, but. They can't expect to sell that many games because everyone owns 30 of them. Even I have two 3DSs.
I have two words for you, Jamie. Switch XL. Mic drop.
Q4 2017. It's the Switch XL.
Yes. I'm trying to think. So I had the OG 3DS, a red 3DS XL, a Pikachu 3DS XL, a Majora's Mask new 3DS XL, and the current new 3DS that I have. So I've had five. Not good.
How many of them did you touch the screen with your finger?
Zero, because I'm not a monster. Huh.
You see, you take that stylus out every time.
I called Child Protective Services, Griffin. I'm sorry.
How do you? No, seriously. Like when you're playing,
Jamie, remember when you were playing... touching the screen with your finger and you're like, "Oh, it's great," and then you stopped.
Yeah.
Because you're not a monster.
Because I realized the error of my ways.
Yeah, it looks awful. It's covered in grease and grime. They're terrible screens.
How do you do that? Like, do you keep the stylus like at hand or in a?
You know how there's like this hole in the system where the stylus lives all the time.
Uh huh.
I just pull it out.
But what if?
And then I put it back.
What you must? Oh my god! How,
Griffin? I don't know if you know this, but medically speaking, fingers have no purpose other than to excrete what is essentially called finger poop onto everything you touch. So and then you have to spend your whole life getting the finger poop.
Oh, now I understand why you need the like $3,000 pen for your iPad. I get it.
Yeah.
No, I will happily touch the screen on the Switch when it comes out because it's a glass capacitive touchscreen.
We'll see about that.
These things are just like shitty, terrible.
That's going to be my bet. Is Jeff actually going to touch the screen on this?
Well, no, I can't touch the screen. Because the thing is, here's the thing about the Switch. I can take the Switch and rub it on my pants, and then it's done. Like, it's clean. I can't do that with a 3DS. I know it sounds dumb, but I can't do that
the
with
Switch
a 3DS.
The Switch might not be done, but you would be.
You can't rub a 3DS on your pants.
In the last few minutes, Jeff has told us that he whips it out, and then he rubs it on his pants.
I'm just saying from like practicality, like when I do pull the stylus out, I like just put it in my mouth or something for ease of access. Like having to pull it back from that stupid little slot is such a pain.
Everyone thinks Griff is vaping because he's got the stylus in his mouth the whole time.
Sometimes I will touch the screen with my knuckle because there's not as much oil on there. So like if I just want to quickly touch the screen.
So you do have skin to screen contact.
Occasionally, yeah, with my knuckles.
Okay,
but and he feels really bad after it. Like he apologizes to his 3DS. Yeah.
You ever touch it with a fingernail?
Yes, I have. In order to like clean it off, sometimes like if there's, you know how like stuff accumulates on the screen, like little pieces of gunk. Like I'll scratch it off with my fingertip.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But I never touch it with my actual fingers, man. That's nasty.
Mm-hmm.
What's wrong with you?
Yeah.
So are you also telling me that the screen on your Wii U isn't covered in like sneeze splatter?
It's not covered in sneeze splatter, but, like, despite me never touching it, it's still nasty.
Yeah. There's something about the Wii U gamepad that just attracts,
that was
like...
so disgusting.
Yeah.
No, it's just...
It's like the McDonald's play place of consoles, where it's just...
The
it just
problem is,
it's
just low-quality plastic, so it's like, if you mess with it, it'll get all scratched
up. Yeah,
and stuff.
It's like Tonka truck plastic. It's yeah. The worst.
So, like, when the Switch comes out, it won't be that anymore. It's already been confirmed to be glass, so I'm fine with, like, touching it and cleaning it off with a cloth. But I just wouldn't do that with the 3DS, because it's just not a good screen. Mm. That's the long and short of it, basically.
That was the one thing that came out of the Switch, like, you know, New York Day preview thing that really made me feel good about that system. Because for me, the only thing that really matters is that little screen good? And everyone said it was.
Yeah,
so I'm cool.
Yep.
Yeah, I think that matters to me, and hopefully the Joy-Cons will be comfortable to use on their own, because I'm excited about the prospect of two-player gaming with them, and I don't want them to suck.
I hate reporting on other podcasts, but from everything that I've been listening to coming out of that, the answer is no, they suck.
I think it depends on who you listen to. Giant Bomb hated them,
yep.
Engadget loved them, so it really depends.
Well, I've listened to a couple other things, and they've also said that they look small and uncomfortable, and they are small
and
uncomfortable.
It'll probably be that
they're manageable.
I'll probably love them, and you guys will probably hate them because my hands are the size of a child's.
I want them to be something you can get used to. Like, I don't, if they are just not functional in that mode, I'm going to be mad because I'm going to be like, why did you bother? But if they are usable, like I love the Wiimote as a controller. So if I can love this as a controller too, I know it's smaller.
Jeff, just shell out the $80 or whatever for the Pro Controller. $70? What is it?
I might shell out
70,
for that
isn't it?
Down the line, but I'd love to avoid it if I can for a while. Plus, they're not even selling the damn thing yet. So do you guys know about Longmore at all?
No.
Nope.
Okay. So when XCOM, Enemy Unknown, later Enemy Within came out, something that generated a lot of buzz was there was an unofficial an unofficial mod or expansion that came out called Long War, which was a total conversion mod, changed the way the game played, made it a lot longer, really enhanced the strategy layer, made it a lot harder, just kind of like leaned into all the cool stuff about XCOM and really turned them up like a ton more. Like a game that started out being around 20 to 30 hours turned into like a 60-hour game. I mean, the length can be is something that maybe isn't the best, but the other stuff that came with that, you know, making basically taking the coolest parts of XCOM, which is the really tense encounters, and making them even more tense and interesting. And this studio or this packing or mod group rather that made this later turned into a studio now called Pavanis Interactive. I think it was previously called Long War Studios. And when XCOM 2 came out and modding was announced, they had them on board making a few mods. I think you guys remember that?
Nope.
Nope.
Alrighty. Well, anyway, one of the so basically the reason that XCOM 2 supported mods is because of Long War. And kind of to celebrate that, this newly, you know, named Long War Studios, now Pavanis, put out a few mods at launch for XCOM 2, which were pretty well regarded. And just in the past, I don't know, let's say month or so, they announced that they were working on Long War 2, which is another total conversion mod that that basically does the same thing to XCOM 2. So it's you know, taking
the
base
game.
No, it's totally free. So that's the cool thing. So
how do you get it?
Through Steam Workshop.
Oh.
And the cool thing is that this time they're working directly with FireAxis, and FireAxis was heavily promoting the mod, and everyone expected, okay, so, like, you know, FireAxis is promoting this and posting on their community blogs about it, it's going to be paid. But then the thing just came out, and it's totally free, which is awesome.
I have several questions.
Sure.
First of all, so I own XCOM 2, and I tried to play it, and I really liked what I saw, but that game is, like, the hardest game ever.
Yeah. Same thing for XCOM. I'm in the same boat there with Jamie.
So does this in any way... It sounds like they're catering to the people who want this game to be super hard. But I'm hoping that maybe this somehow does something so that it can still be hard, but maybe I can still wrap my head around it?
Does it make it feel like when it says 75% chance you actually are hitting it 75% of the time, it's not like...
That doesn't change. So... Long War did have a reputation for being hard. They're going to great lengths to talk about how this doesn't have to be hard, and it does offer all four original difficulties, so you can still play the game on rookie. And it does, it changes a lot, so it might be worth poking your head into anyway, because it turns like the four in-game classes into nine, adds three skill progression paths rather than two, lots of new abilities, interesting new strategy layer stuff. So it changes it. I mean, it doesn't have to make it harder. In fact, it does some things which might make the early game a little easier, like it increases squad size.
Thank God.
Yeah, so like it's, you go from a squad, I think, of four in the first mission. You start the first mission with, like, eight units.
Whoa.
And then from there on, you can usually bring around 10 units on missions.
Wow.
So it probably makes the earlier game easier because of that.
Question number two. Mm-hmm. I never understood how the, like, farming new units worked, like, because my people were constantly dying. Sure. And I never understood how skill progression worked. I felt like the original game, XCOM 2, did a terrible game, a job of explaining how that stuff worked. Does this game presuppose you have knowledge from the original?
Probably to some degree. I mean, I could talk you guys through how that works. Basically, if your units die, you're not going to develop as that's the key. Like, you have to survive. Like, you can't just keep losing units. You have to have units get through missions in order to get promotions.
Okay.
That's where you went wrong. it's a game that really punishes making those kinds of mistakes, or it's not even always a mistake. Sometimes it's just bad luck. But it really punishes fucking up, basically. Not only do you lose your unit in the mission, but you get set back in progression. And it's important to have, like, diverse squads of, like, some rookies and some skilled units, because the rookies are so much worse. But you need a varied squad, because sometimes they get hurt and they can't be in combat anymore. So, they're not going to help that much with that. So it's probably not for you guys. But for me, I'm really excited about it.
Can you save scum this?
You can save scum it. I mean, you could save scum XCOM 2 as well.
I thought you couldn't, because the dice rolls were, like, predetermined. Or, excuse me, like, they would just roll the same direction no matter what.
Oh, I don't know if you can save scum mid-mission, but you don't have to, like, you can restart missions.
Right.
As long as you don't play Iron Man.
Right.
I don't know what save scumming looks like in mission. I'm not sure if it's like Fire Emblem, where all the roles are predetermined or not. I would assume not, but maybe I'm wrong.
And are the terrible performance issues that really plagued XCOM 2 at launch
gone? Yeah, the game runs so much better now. Like, there are some funny glitches still, like where, like, a character will go to break a window that isn't there, so they'll just elbow midair.
That sounds delightful.
It's really amazing. no, it works so much better than it did before. They definitely tightened that up. So cool. I'm excited about it. I think it's a huge shuttle conversion mod. It was made in partnership with Firaxis, which is awesome, and it's totally free. So if anyone who's listening to this liked XCOM 2, you should probably go download that, because it looks super good.
Awesome.
But that's all I got to say about that. I played the first mission, and I was doing great, and then got fucked on my rolls and lost a unit, and I was like, you know what? I'm not losing a unit on the first mission.
So what you're saying is, like, you can't really save scum. Like, I would like to save scum before, like, every decision, and I would be able to, like, jump back right before that unit died and do something different.
You might be able to. I was playing Iron Man, which doesn't allow you to do that. Because I like that. But you may be able to in non-Iron Man. I just don't know. I suspect you can.
Cool.
But I would look it up. Anyway, that's what I've been playing.
Nice.
You guys want to... Oh, Griff, you were playing another game.
I was. Talk about that before we dive into I didn't talk about it last time we talked. And that's... I don't remember why. I think I was just, like, just starting it or something. But I finished the first episode and started the second episode of Strong Bad's Awesome Game for Attractive People.
I love that title.
I just kind of was like, I really like Homestar Runner and would like more than just the cartoons that I've already watched, you know, a gajillion times over. So I picked up the game.
Have you watched the new ones, Griff?
Yeah.
That come out, like, very... Okay.
Yep. Carry like, on. Once a year.
Yeah.
Boy, yeah, oh boy, those Telltale games were rough when they first came out, huh?
Really?
Walking Dead and, like, what's another more recent one that I played that I enjoyed? The Borderlands one. They've really refined that style of I guess, what do you call it? Like, narrative, a graphic novel, choose-your-own-adventure thing.
Basically, they put enough duct tape on that engine so that it resembles something decent.
Yeah. Strongman's awesome game is very much like primordial ooze compared to what they have. It's very writing-heavy. Like, the puzzles are not challenging. It's just more of, like, trying to figure out... It's like classic adventure game where you're trying to just figure out what you're supposed to do with this chicken and a pulley.
Like, I like the sound of that.
These things don't really make sense. But there's also, like, the challenge isn't really the puzzle. It's more of just, like, a... Like, you were a tourist in the world of Strong Bad Zone, and you could just go to these locations and listen to this dialogue and you know, click on this thing to make this other thing, this dude say this funny thing. It's great. But
cool.
In terms of a game, oof, boy, that's a rough one.
Yeah. Did that game launch on the Wii? Is that right?
I think it did. I think it launched on the Wii, and then it eventually made it to, like, iPad or something, or iPhone, and now it's on, I got it on PC.
Also, can I tell you that I thought you were wrong about the name, and I thought it was Strong Bad's cool game for attractive people, mm-hmm. and then I looked it up and I was right.
Oh, so it...
Eat my balls.
Nice. It's Strong Bad's cool game for attractive people?
Yes.
Great. Perfect. Thank you for fixing that.
For correcting that adjective.
Excellent. Yeah, the what else? We can talk more about things I'm wrong about later, but... I also went to the Barcade, the here in Des Moines, yesterday, and...
Oh, cool.
Though they are slowly bleeding some of my favorites, they did have a Neo Geo cabinet that had Samurai Showdown and, most importantly, Windjammers on it. So I was able to, for the first time in my life, play Windjammers.
That's awesome.
It was amazing.
Whoa. Cool.
So should we... I hope it has online multiplayer when it comes to PS4. That would be
yes,
amazing.
Yes, I hope so, too. But yeah, I looked into that when I got back, and... Windjammers is supposed to be coming to the PS4, but no scheduled date for that yet.
Mm.
So, I'm cannot excited. Wait for that, and having actually played for real Windjammers, man, oh man, I cannot wait to do that. It is a great game. It is the best game.
Awesome.
That is exciting.
Samurai Showdown is really crazy, too. I hope that gets... I kind of want to go pick that up.
I'm not familiar with that.
It's like a sprite-based fighter.
Okay. But. Is it like a... Like a... Like a 2D fighter? Like,
yep.
like a classic? Okay.
Yep.
Because I know Neo Geo had a ton of fighters on it.
Yeah, they're all pretty much 2D, I think. Yeah. But this one, like just the little time that I flirted around with it, the character movesets seem really weird. And mm-hmm. like as you win matches, it gives you like tips as to new moves and things like that. So I'm like, oh, that's kind of cool. But it's crazy. It's super crazy, and I want to check it out more.
We got to bring back Eternal Champions. For Sega Genesis. Do you guys remember that game?
No.
Did either of you play it? Oh my god, it was so fucking weird.
Eternal
Champions.
It was
like, it was people from different eras that were all brought together to fight. And like, there was like a dude with like a fedora and like a grappling hook. And then like another dude that shot lasers. Oh, it was a weird ass game. I'll show it to you guys after the podcast.
This sounds like it's like War Dog or War Gods for the Nintendo 64. Is it that level of... Like, awful bad, or was this actually a good game?
I loved it as a kid. Okay. It's, no, it's, like, not a good game, but I loved it.
Okay.
But awesome.
The last thing that I wanted to talk about for games that I played is actually a game I didn't play. So, much like your guys' talks, JK. at the arcade, there was something that I've never seen before, and it was called Killer Queen. And it's a 10-person arcade cabinet.
Whoa.
So it's 5-on-5 matches where I didn't play it, but I watched a couple people play, and from what I can tell, like, you have one queen per team, and the queen has, like, the ability to fly around and claim, like, points or claim, like, locations that then increase something. I couldn't tell what. The queens can also attack other units, but then the other units are just drones, and they're running around the map, like, collecting honey and stuff and bringing it back to the lair. So I'm watching these people win, and it just, the screen ends and it's like, economic victory. So I'm like, whoa, that is crazy. Or it's like, you know, military victory, and the queen kills the other queen or something. And I just thought that was so cool that, like, there's a new crazy huge arcade machine out there that's doing stuff that I've never seen done in an arcade setting.
Badass.
So I'm looking
at this is a new game.
Brand new.
Interesting.
I'm looking at pictures of the cabinet itself, and it is amazing.
Yeah.
So it looks like two cabinets, right, Griff?
Yes.
Combined.
There are two cabinets that kind of sit at angles to each other, so you can't see the other screen. Not that it really matters, but then the other thing is there's like another gigantic screen above the whole thing showing it to the audience.
The whole game?
Yeah.
Wow, that is awesome.
Yeah.
Oh, this looks really cool. I love the art for it.
Yeah.
It's really funny.
Yep. I have intentions to go back and try this game at some point to just say that I've done it. Because I guess it is obviously limited in its locations due to its size and whatnot, but I'm excited to go try that.
The winners of the Killer Queens tournament was Fat Bottom Girls.
You did it. Obviously.
Crushing stereotypes across the world.
Well, that's a queen thing, Griff, if you didn't know that.
Oh, I get it. That's pretty good.
Yeah. It's bicycle race.
Okay.
Bicycle race, bicycle race, bicycle race. Okay. So are we all good on games? We gonna get over to the Newsland?
Sure.
Finish this bad boy.
Yeah.
Oh wait. There's one more game I played a little more of.
Okay.
I don't know how. I don't want to talk about it at all. I just want you guys to know that somehow I played like two more hours of Pocket Card Jockey.
That's all. Amazing.
Yep. The game is so good bad.
Are you clamoring for a Switch port?
I would totally play a Switch.
Oh, man.
None of you got into that.
No.
Never picked it up.
I don't think I even bought it. Because you told us, you basically were like, don't do it.
Yeah, I'm glad. I'm glad that you guys didn't. I'm glad. I'm happy for both of you. Okay, move on. Let's move on.
I was going to say, I have momentous news, which is that I sold Mario Kart 8 and Splatoon in preparation for rebuying them like a chump on...
Jeez.
So let's get into the news. You want to talk about the couple of little Switch tidbits before we jump into the Fire Emblem Direct?
Yeah, sure. So Isaac confirmed at launch.
Which is cool. Yeah.
That's very cool, especially for someone like me who I've always been intrigued by that game. I've purchased it at least once, but I've never really gotten into it. I think the reason why is I purchased it initially on my Ultrabook, thinking this will be a great game to play on my Ultrabook, but I really didn't like playing it with the keyboard and the trackpad. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I'm really excited to play it on I hope that the Switch, the Joy-Con are good and that I can play on the Switch and that'll be like a fun experience.
Yeah, I think it will be. I mean, the main thing is just going to be whether or not the second analog stick is hard to reach to, which is another complaint that I've read, unfortunately, that the positioning of that right analog stick is a little awkward. Hmm. But again, it might be perfect for your hands, Jamie.
Just call me Donald Trump hands.
Just like a little Asian boy making sneakers in a factory. Yeah, I'm excited about that too. Depending on how it runs and whether it's supposed to, a good port, I might consider grabbing it just to have it on the go. I think the Switch will be a great platform for it. So, the other stuff that
know if it's what version of Isaac it is?
Yep, it's Afterbirth Plus.
Okay,
so it's the most recent version with some rudimentary mod support. It's not going to be like mod support for Skyrim on PS4, pretty limited, only use in-game assets, etc. But speaking of Nicolas, they announced a whole bunch of their other games are coming to Switch, and in so doing, they tweeted a picture of a dark theme for the Switch, which actually excites me more than it should.
No, that's really cool.
Yeah.
I'm glad that they'll have little things like that.
Those little things make me feel like Nintendo might be actually being slightly modern with this thing. Like, I'm like, oh, they're thinking about weird UI shit like that. Like, this is not the Nintendo I know. which is probably just false hope, but I'm into it.
I wrote something else down on there, which I will talk about now very briefly because I feel like it fits with that sentiment, which is I was just in the Nintendo New York store, and that place feels so weird and eerie. It's really empty now. They're clearly making way for the Switch.
Huh.
There are signs up on the walls that say Switch. And, nothing below them that has anything to do with the Switch, just, empty space.
And Hyrule Warriors below.
But they clearly have, big plans for... They're probably going to devote a gigantic, portion of the square footage of that store to that thing. I mean, obviously, but it seems like they're really like preparing and gaining way for it. And in typical Nintendo fashion, still like being really like pussyfooted about it and like not, not like letting anything through, like not giving a hint of anything that they might install. So I just,
yeah,
I
how
just,
great would it be if there was like one Switch demo unit in there?
Exactly. Like, it's a month away. There should be.
Yeah. Honestly, like just put one in there. Fucking, yeah. Everyone would be there playing that thing.
That's a great but point. If any place, that's the place to do it.
Yeah, yeah. They already had private demos. Why not have public demos?
Yeah.
So dumb.
Well, but. I guess, again, to report other podcasts, it sounds like the demo units that were out there like required a lot of management and a lot of oversight to make sure that people weren't doing things they shouldn't be doing and like going to debug menus or kind of taking the thing out of people's hands when things would go awry. So I think this next month will be a crunch.
Yet. Yeah, like I guess someone in a podcast that I listened to said that they had seen a little bit of Switch interface that they weren't supposed to. So that maybe they're still controlling the messaging pretty carefully around that.
Yeah, I think they are, but they still could put at least one unit in there because even the Wii U's and the 3DS's in the Nintendo New York store are bolted down like they have those huge black like ribbed like metal sheaths over everything like as
for
if
pleasure.
They're like protecting it from theft, and it's like you guys realize that there's 80 million 3DS's out there. You don't need to worry about it.
They're protecting it from people touching it with their grubby fingers.
Yes. Exactly. The screen is covered with so many layers of anti-child grind protectors. Yeah, I had that experience with the Nintendo Store late last year as well, Jamie. It does seem to be in this kind of weird period of transition, and I really hope that we're heading towards a blowout. You know, I think we got some good information about the Switch, but I hope that we get more directs, and this is maybe a good point to segue into the Fire Emblem Direct, but I hope that we get more steady flow of information like those Fire Emblem Directs with exciting, interesting first-party information, big and small. Because I think that could do a lot to make this thing more interesting.
I hope so. I hope so, too. And I think, so even before we jump into the Fire Emblem, because that's kind of a meaty topic. The Bomberman price reduction actually really surprised me, because I'm sure that Capcom doesn't have complete control. Like, I'm sure that Capcom had to... Do you guys think that Capcom had to go through Nintendo before they were like, okay, people are responding really poorly, let's not make this a full-price game?
I don't think Capcom was involved.
I don't think that whoever the publisher was, Hudson, Konami, whoever, whatever it is. But I don't think it really matters. Like I think that those prices are just in flux at the moment anyway.
Well, that's a good thing because I would have assumed that if Nintendo gets to this point, that's set in stone and they would never alter from their course. But the fact that they did, even in this small way, is a good sign to me.
I think it speaks to, I mean, Konami is, you know, kind of has this reputation as being a rapacious publisher, so I wouldn't be surprised if they were seeing if they could get $60 and then after the negative backlash cut it. But I think it does speak to a kind of a question or a concern that I have about Switch pricing and how that's going to work. Because I think that right now, and again, the Direct will maybe touch on this a little bit, but we're seeing the Switch and the 3DS coexisting, and I think that eventually the Switch will absorb the 3DS's audience.
I hope so.
That's the plan, I think.
Yeah.
And once 3DS type games come to Switch, so like once games that are designed with a handheld sensibility in mind come to Switch, I wonder if those will be more in line with the $40 or so pricing structure, or if we'll see those trend upward in price. And I think the confusion around pricing for the launch stuff, it kind of speaks to the kind of Wild West right now. Like we don't know how that's going to play out yet.
Yeah. Information's not set in stone yet.
Yeah, who knows if that Pro Controller, I mean, they're facing a lot of backlash. Who knows if that thing will still be $70 when it actually is available for purchase? I hope it
will. If there's one company that will not yield on their pricing, that is Nintendo.
That's true. It's just so funny because it's like, in some ways... Like,
go anywhere right now and try and buy a copy of Metroid Other M for less than $40. I dare you.
Should I play that game?
Nope.
Nope.
Okay.
Actually, I don't know. I still debate whether I should give it a chance or not.
I owned it and I sold it and I had some like pangs of regret after selling it. But I was like, you know what? Like, I didn't have fun with this at all. Well, like, it's not a good game. But I'm like, maybe it is. I'm like, no, I hated it.
It has the Nintendo seal of quality.
No, I don't think it's a very good game.
Okay.
Yeah, you could spend your time in better ways.
Okay, now I'm fully ready to discuss the Fire Emblem.
The Fire Emblem Direct. Yeah, and we can dig into that. So on the 18th, I think it was, they announced like right after the Switch event, they said, hey, there's going to be a Fire Emblem Direct. And I think, unlike most Nintendo Directs, it ended up actually being a little more meaty than people expected.
Yeah.
I didn't expect
kind of too much meat, because I tried to watch it and was like, okay, I can't be on the bike at the gym. There's too many details here that I need to pay attention to.
Nintendo, why aren't these Directs disappointing and sparse with information? What the fuck?
So there's a mobile game. There's a 3DS game coming out in May. Yeah. There's a Switch game that's coming out next year. That's a complete new Fire Emblem in the Fire Emblem style. And then there's also the Fire Emblem Warriors Switch game that's also coming to the 3DS.
The new 3DS only.
The new 3DS only. So there's four.
The second new 3DS exclusive game.
Wait, the Fire Emblem Warriors is going to Switch, isn't it?
Yes.
Okay.
And 3DS.
And new 3DS.
So, and I think there's so much interesting in terms of like what platforms were selected for this stuff and the messaging around it. I think that's the compelling piece to me. I think it. Well, first of all, I guess the 3DS game was intriguing to me because it's based off of a Fire Emblem Gaiden, which is like a side story with weird new mechanics like dungeon exploration and shit like that. Hmm. Like the stuff they were showing looked really odd. But it also looked pretty tight, and they've it's a little less anime in the art style, or like it's still anime but less like pervy anime, which is kind of nice. It looks like it has a little more kind of that classic Fire Emblem flair, kind of mixed with some weird new mechanics. But what did you guys think of that? It was Shadows of Valentia, I think it was called.
I'm really excited for it. I think that the kind of newer gameplay ideas that they demonstrated would be really welcome in a Fire Emblem game. I like alternate modes in Fire Emblem games. I liked how in the newest one there was that like castle defense thing going on. Mm-hmm. And then also like building your castle and, you know, placing the, you know, houses in the castle wherever you want. I love that stuff. So I think that, and I think that whenever they add a new mode into those games, or whenever they change anything about those games, it's really thought out and well planned. So I hope it all comes together.
Yeah, I remember having a lot of trepidation about like, oh, weapons aren't going to break anymore, and like, how is this going to affect the game? But they pretty much nailed it in terms of all that stuff. Like, it's maybe not balanced for like a multiplayer mode or something, but it is all very, as you said, it's very thought out. Mm-hmm. It's clearly not just pandering. It's not like, oh, we're going to dumb this down to make it easier. It's like, how are we going to make this interesting while eliminating some of the really kind of ancient and dated shit?
I was kind of on the opposite side of the spectrum. Like, after watching that, I'm like, okay, I'm kind of overwhelmed now. And it's like back to the when I first started playing Fire Emblem, I'm like, wait, what does this stat mean? How does this speed influence my turn order, or why does this weapon, like, I understand this weapon's better than this weapon, but why does it, when I equip it, then change my stat to be this? I don't know. I thought there was a lot of confusing things with the Fire Emblem games that took a while to suss out, and now that they're like, here's more, I'm like, I'm not ready yet.
I completely agree.
It looked like the UI was somewhat simplified. It looked much more readable than it used to be, kind of like a little sparser and more Spartan. So I think it'll be a combination of like simplified elements and also some kind of new pieces of stuff to mess with that aren't going to be too crazy. But I don't know. It looked good. I'm excited to see them kind of pivoting towards a more classic angle, just because I think some of the modern stuff can sometimes get a little bit too anime wifey.
I agree. I think that in terms of like the stat stuff, I think that Fire Emblem is much like this new mixing board I have. I'll never really understand it, but I'll get to a point where I can hopefully, it'll just work, and like there'll still be things that I'll never get, but it'll just work enough, and I'm okay with that because the rest of the game is great.
Yeah, I did think some of the stuff from Gaiden sounds a little weird, like the class changing at statues things. It seems weird, like you can change to lots of different classes. That seemed a little complicated, but I'm reserving judgment until the game comes out. I'm sure it'll be implemented in a way that is at least sensible.
And then
I'm thrilled to have a new Fire Emblem coming in May. I mean, that's great.
And I'm thrilled to have this new mobile game come out like in a couple of days.
Yeah, it looks fun. I feel like it's pretty limited, but I like that it's still Fire Emblem combat. Like, it's still stat, as Griffin would say, stat-ass combat. Like, stat-ass, statty combat.
Stat-ass.
Stat-ass.
But when we were watching the Direct, and we were starting to wonder if it was a CCG, and then I jokingly said, I'm really hoping for blind packs and doubles, duplicates.
And then there was there!
And then there was blind packs and duplicates.
And then the heroes had battle damage.
Yeah.
No, it looks like it'll just gotcha.
Can I rub the touchscreen to get their clothes to come off?
Probably. It looks like it'll have some gotcha stuff in it, but it looks like it'll be... It won't be the worst of it. Like, you can turn your shitty level 2 hero into a level 5 hero if you grind enough. So, like, it'll be okay.
I'm just wondering, like, what the pricing structure is going to be.
Yeah, well, I think it's going to be, you know, use gems to get new heroes and shit, and maybe use gems to level them up quicker, stuff like that. But they said there's a campaign in play. I was a little ambivalent about the 6x8 grids, but it looks like you can actually fit a lot of shit into those. Like, there was some interesting terrain stuff going on. I was actually very impressed.
Yeah, I mean, and that's, they have to simplify it a little bit for mobile, you know?
They do, yeah. I mean, it's a different audience. And I think, while I initially, when they showed the map, I was like, oh, there's, like, no terrain or anything on this map. When they started showing additional maps, I was like, oh, actually, there's some stuff going on here. Like, I gotta give them props for this.
Yeah.
So I think it remains to be seen, but I am cautiously optimistic about it. I'm sure I'll have at least a decent time fucking around with it for a couple days. So.
And you both liked the Zelda Warriors game, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I had a good time with it, yeah.
So are you guys pumped for this thing?
Nope.
I'll check it out.
I don't care. I think Zelda's cooler because I think there's more items and interesting kind of diverse play styles that come from Zelda. I just think it's a more interesting world in terms of, like, varied enemy types and stuff like that. I don't see Fire Emblem offering the same. Like, everyone has a sword or, like, a lance. Like, it's all the same.
Mm.
So we'll have to see.
Yeah.
I'm not super into that, though. But I don't know. It could be decent. And it is weird that it's coming to new 3DS as well.
It's weird.
Makes you wonder, like, how long is the 3DS going to stick around for alongside this thing? And... is it the more portable version of the portable?
Yeah, all I hope is they're like, this just happens to work out this way.
That's how I feel, especially because it's only coming to new 3DS.
Yeah.
Like, it seems like, you know, this is like a death knell for that system. Like, okay, we're going to support this because we sort of can, but it's getting to the end of the line.
It's going to run like the Zelda Warriors game ran on the 3DS at like 15 frames per second. It's going to be... awful, I guarantee. I'm pretty much am sure.
On the new 3DS, it runs pretty well. It runs at like a solid 30.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah, it does. So if they're using the same engine, then it might actually be okay. But yeah, I wonder if it's going to run on the new 3DS like the current one runs on the old 3DS.
Yeah, that would be a bummer.
Yeah. Also, the other big announcement, which you alluded to, Jamie, which I have some thoughts on, they didn't show anything, but they said, hey, we're working on Fire Emblem for Switch. It's going to be the first true console Fire Emblem in, you know, since the GameCube days. I found that interesting because they went to great pains to describe it as a console Fire Emblem. And I wonder if the era of, like, mobile Fire Emblem is now dead. Like, do they now have to put a whole bunch of resources into making this look and feel like a console game, even though it started as a handheld series? Like, I'm wondering... I think this is the big question with Switch. Like, what happens to the stuff that was on 3DS? Does it now have heightened expectations? Do the budgets swell and grow? Or do they continue to kind of make more humble, you know, less graphically intensive, less story-driven experiences? Like, I wonder what is going to come of that.
Yeah, it's a great question. I really don't know. I mean, I think that cost increase is mitigated somewhat by the fact that, you know, Switch games have a lower, like, expected install size, it seems. Like, we're not talking 80 gigs, we're talking like 13 gigs or whatever. So,
yeah.
And it's not, these aren't, you know, games that the companies are like looking to project onto 4K screens. So it's not like you need 4K assets for these things. But at the same time, yeah, I don't think that any Japanese game company will be comfortable taking the type of visuals that we would get on the 3DS and putting them on the Switch. I just don't think that that's something they would do.
Well, it's just, it's like such an interesting thing because, like, I would love it if $40 games could coexist with $60 games. I would love it if you know, your Pokemons and your Fire Emblems kind of stayed within that space,
mm-hmm.
but had assets that could be scaled up. I would love it if they kind of had like a mobile first design, you know, and they targeted that price, they targeted that audience. But it's not clear. And I think that'll be an interesting piece of how the Switch does and whether or not Nintendo can have that sustained first-party output. Because I think if they become a primarily console-style development firm, then it's going to be really hard for them to put out enough output to keep this interesting, especially with kind of anemic third-party support. You know what I mean?
I think it'll be interesting to see what happens with the Switch version of Pokemon Sun and Moon. And I think that'll be like the bar they set. And what they, in terms of what they expect from games that had previously been mobile games.
Mm-hmm. That's and a good point,
I think that will be like the first sign of what's to come, because that was more or less confirmed, right? Even though they haven't said anything about it.
Right.
It's not confirmed. I mean, GameStop mentioned playing Pokemon on Switch. That could just be because they know that, you know, down the line we're going to see Pokemon on the Switch. It's really not clear.
Okay.
Huh.
I'm the kind of person who loves me some rumors, and Eurogamer seem pretty sure of themselves, but I wouldn't say we're 100% on this one yet. But I do agree, Jamie. I think that'll be a really interesting point if and when they announce that, to see like what does that look like, what is the cost like. You know, I think there's a lot of questions there as to what we can expect. I wish they'd shown like a screenshot of the Switch version, because I think it would tell me a lot more about kind of what they're targeting.
Mm-hmm.
But alas.
Did you guys expect the Switch to sell out everywhere as quickly as it did? Do you think that's all that would always happen, regardless of what Nintendo was putting out in terms of a console? Or do you think that's actually a good sign?
No, I think it's going to happen no matter what at this point.
I don't think we can really know. What do you think, Griff?
I think it doesn't matter. Like, consoles launches, they're going to sell out no matter what.
Let's see what happens. I think the real barometer is going to be when we hit launch. What does the inventory look like? What is the sell-through? Because if this is, you know, sitting on store shelves like 2 weeks after launch, then we got a problem.
And Reggie's promise that they won't have the same type of supply issues that they had for the NES Classic, is that just something that he has to say, or does that actually have any weight behind it?
Probably both. I mean, they have 2 million at launch, which is decent. I mean,
how do we know that number?
He used it. He said they have 2 million at launch, but that's across all regions, so
mm-hmm.
I don't remember how many units the Wii U moved at launch, but it's not a huge number, but it's decent. It's not like you'll be able to go and just grab one off a shelf, but it won't be as supply constrained as the Wii, which I think only launched with either 500,000 or 1 million units, so
okay.
We will see.
I agree.
Griff, are you alive again? I heard you.
I heard him.
I agree with what you said.
Not chancing it. all right. Well, do we have anything else to cover here, or should we wind this baby down? Cut it at a tight hour and change.
Yeah, this nice little like small episode has now gone into over an hour. And while I'm still able to be heard, the one thing I was going to say is we haven't really, maybe we have at the end of the year, we talked about most anticipated stuff for this 2017. Is that something maybe... I'm trying to remember if we did talk about this before.
I don't think we did.
I don't think we did. I think it could be something that we could hit on at a future date. You know, we had a nice full cast here, and I'm sure there'll be a lull period where we can think about it and put together some stuff that we're really into.
Sure.
I mean, I'm excited about Horizon on the Horizon.
Yeah.
All right. But beyond that, I can't even think of what's coming out this year. I'm sure there's plenty, but it's just not hitting me.
All right. Well, after some research, then I guess we'll get back and talk about what we are excited about. In the meantime, we should all play some more games and do this again.
Yeah. Hey, do you want to ask about Resident Evil before we go, Jamie?
Hey, y'all going to play Resident Evil?
Nah.
not even a little?
Nope.
I did play through Resident Evil 6 from start to finish.
Oh, I'm sorry.
I'm one of like the six people in the world that did that.
You needed to prove a point.
Did the giraffes flay each other?
I can't tell you that. That's the secret that I have to keep with the game.
Are you going to play it, Jamie?
I'm intrigued by it. I don't know why you guys aren't. I thought that demo was pretty cool.
I don't really like horror games that much, is pretty much the main reason.
Yeah.
I have a hard time with them.
I do, too. That's kind of why I liked 4, 5, 6, is because they weren't horror. They're big, dumb, stupid action shooters.
Yeah. Well, okay. Well, maybe I'll be the I'll report from the front lines, because I'm actually kind of excited for where it's going. Hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. I also just feel like, I don't know, it's too much of a departure for me. I don't feel like it should be called Resident Evil anymore. I have a hard time getting past that.
Honestly, I mean, for games changing it up.
Jamie,
I am too.
I'll promise you this. If you play through Resident Evil, if you put more than 10 hours into Resident Evil 7 or whatever it is.
Assuming the game even is that long.
I will go to the new Resident Evil movie in theaters and stay and watch the whole thing.
That's just something you want to do.
I was going to say, Griffin, don't do something that's actually fun in exchange for him doing something that might suck.
What is wrong with you?
That movie, okay, I would hate watch the fuck out of that movie. Like, I would go in there knowing what to expect and have a grand time with
that
movie.
I can't do that. I can't go to a movie if... I can't go to movies, first of all.
Yeah, so, that's actually true of me as well.
sitting paying for a movie and sitting in a movie theater for 2 hours, doing it in it for something that I have absolutely no interest in and actually, like, a negative affection for, that is torture. Especially when
Mila Jovovich fucking loves Resident Evil.
When there's actual good movies this year that I have plans to see, like, this is going to make things really complicated.
What is Spectre? I see that on the
it's it's about the Spectre of Torment for Shovel Knight. We already talked about it.
Oh, okay, gotcha.
Yeah, but that's all.
Mm-hmm. All right, boys.
Griff doesn't like good movies.
Rogue One.
That was
so good.
Subpar.
Oh, hey, God.
I wonder how that movie is.
What? You can be the tiebreaker here, man. You gotta go. You gotta go so you can come back and
I'll go right after I play a computer game.
Jeff, go to the movie, right afterwards. But don't stay for the end. And then give your opinions on it.
Post-credits scene?
Yeah, no, just like go about two-thirds of the way through the film and then purport it was amazing.
It was Mads Mikkelsen in a Star Wars movie.
He's in it?
Yeah, he is.
He is. He could have been a cardboard cutout in that film.
Yeah, he could. It doesn't matter.
It's Mads. I'm Mads for Mads. All right, guys. I got to pee, so we got to wrap this
thing up. Yeah, I pee so badly.
All right, guys. I guess this has been Boss Bar Radio episode 5,222 in the year of our Lord, 2000 even.
Sometimes, you know, you gotta switch it up. Out of myself, I got a story to tell.
Nice.
How now, brown cow?